now to Beirut and listen to the Hezbollah Secretary General Seyed Hassan Nasrallah speaking.
Most of them are employees, most of them are teachers. Of course, I'm going to speak about this just a few moments before I turn to the general situation in Lebanon. We have some Lebanese children who are in the school. Some of them have official exams, etc. And so many of them have to enlist in universities. And so we have an equation, as I said before, speaking about the presidency, the situation in Syria, I just want to touch upon this issue a little. Many Lebanese have gone through this situation. We have reached a very sensitive phase now. It is a mistake. And actually, there is a general sense that some of the politicians in Lebanon are deliberately pursuing this, deliberately putting obstacles. For example, those who work in the public sector, the teachers of the public sector, pitting them against the students and against the families of the students, as if to say that the state has nothing to do with it, as if to say that the state is watching, and so who should make concessions to the other, either the students and the official exams must go as a victim of the rightful demand for some of the employees, or some of the employees must bow down or give up their demands in favor of the students and their families. So sending or reaching such a level is very bad and irresponsible. And I have a lot of terms which are now in my mind to describe the situation, but I won't use these terms right now. However, I do believe that anyone would hope that this could be uncovered or this could be addressed. Anyway, it is irresponsible for us now, in the last days. We had a meeting for the parliament, or we will have a parliamentary meeting, and we also have schedules for official exams here in Lebanon. At this time, at this very time, the two sides are pitted against each other, and as one certain political or parliamentary side, for example, from our side, when we come and ask what should we do, we either tell people put up with the situation, or we tell the employees abandon your demands for the sake of the students. This is a very difficult situation to be put in, whether a moral or ethical situation. But who led us to this stage, to this moment? It is the politicians. They are the ones who led us to this phase. Who should address this in the upcoming few days? The politicians, they should address this matter. Of course, and nobody is holding them accountable. Usually nobody holds the politicians in Lebanon accountable, and they are looking for anyone to accuse for these shortcomings. These politicians today, all of them are responsible for addressing this issue during the upcoming few days. And addressing this doesn't require a lot of planning or programming. The parliamentary blocs are called upon, all of them, with all due respect to the presidential post and for the vacancy, and I'm going to speak about this presidential issue in moments, but all of the parliamentary blocs have a moral and humanitarian or humane and national duty, and nobody has any excuse whatsoever. They must head down to Parliament in order to put an end to this issue during a session, one session or more. It's better if it would take place in one session, but this should be ended, should be closed, and justice must be served to the employees and the students, and the official exams and the general school year must be saved. That is their responsibility. Whoever does not go down is responsible. This is a big issue. If these officials, or if these parliamentary blocs, or if the parliamentarians, if they don't feel the pain of all of those, if they don't feel the need of all those parties, if they don't feel the needs of all those parties, the necessity of those parties, that what they should do, what can we call this? What can we call it? This is the first point. I don't want to elaborate more. I just want to stress and call for addressing this matter, and it is something which can be addressed. I'm not speaking about something which is impossible. Also, with regards to some of the institutions here in Lebanon and some of the professors, we have witnessed over these past few days as if someone wants to pit the university professors against the students to create a problem between both. This is also something which is a responsibility of the politicians. They are responsible for all of these shortcomings. The state takes responsibility, and here the cabinet specifically. This doesn't require parliament. This is an issue related to the cabinet. The cabinet can address it. Why isn't it addressing it or solving this problem? What are the reasons? Are they sectarian? Are they party affiliated? Whatever they may be, this must be addressed, and there must be concessions made as well. All sides must make concessions to address this very important issue. The other point in the Lebanese situation, unfortunately, recently we heard a lot of talk about the accusation, accusing our side, specifically the accusations, they say, accusing the Shia of shortcomings. This is nothing new. However, it reached a stage over the past few weeks and past few days, some people are trying to say that we want presidential vacuum, or we are preventing presidential elections because we want to reach a different phase, the one-third phase, meaning gaining veto power in the cabinet. This was the same accusation which we heard last year, although we all denied this. But once again, they want to put this within the framework of the presidential election confrontation, and also in order to exert pressure on the Shia team, trying to say that if you don't go along with us, if you don't bow down to us, if you don't do this and that, that means you're accused of changing the order, you're accused of trying to gain veto power, you are the ones who want to change the equation. This now is what is being working. What is being worked on. Now, of course, there is a calm comment I want to make. If you insist on this accusation, such an accusation is baseless, and you allege, you say you have evidence, but where is your evidence? Okay, please give me one person from the Shia team, Hezbollah and Amal, or any Shia individual in Lebanon, whether a cleric, whether a professor, whether an intellectual, whether anyone, bring me anyone who says we want some kind of veto power in Lebanon now and before. Give me one evidence, bring one witness, so that we can then apologize and say this individual has made a mistake. This didn't happen. Nobody spoke about this in any way whatsoever. In addition, you realize, and we also spoke about this previously, you know that the idea of veto power was never in our mind, at least in my discussions with my colleagues. Never did this come up, and nobody also had in his mind or in his imagination to bring about such a change in the equation in the country. The first, and once again I want to stress on this point, so that some religious figures are not dragged and some national figures are not dragged along with this mistake in understanding. The first to make such a proposal to raise this was the French. Just a few years ago, a French delegation went to Tehran and spoke with the Iranians regarding the issue of the Taif agreement, saying that this Taif agreement is no longer suitable. Now it's not the time, it's become overdue. Let's go ahead with a new system for Lebanon. The Iranians never raised this idea, never did it occur to them. It also didn't occur to us. And the Iranians, they responded. But they asked us and we said, no, we don't want to change the Taif agreement. We aren't thinking about changing the political system in Lebanon. Those French who are your friends, go and ask them. And this also exists. This was stated during the meetings. Now, if anyone insists to continue accusing us of changing the political system, that's his business, because we will not be subject to pressures by making these accusations. I'm not saying this because we are under pressure. No. Take your time in being convinced that this is not true. If anyone in Lebanon wants to fabricate an illusion or fabricate something which he believes to be dangerous and wants to create a confrontation by using such an illusion, that's his business. Let him do that as much as he wants. But we are not involved. This doesn't concern us. We're not thinking about it. We never demanded it. Nor are we striving to achieve a change in the Lebanese political system. And also, full stop, point. That's the whole issue. Now, if you believe that we, as you accuse us, if you believe that we are striving for a political or for a presidential vacuum in order to impose a change in the political system, if you want to block the road to such a change, then let's go ahead and choose a president and put an end to the vacuum. Go ahead. Accept a strong president who has real national and Christian trademarks. Now, tonight, then we would all call on the parliament speaker. A session will be held. We'll elect a president, and then you'll block the road to a change in the political system. We are ready for such an approach, but he who prevents someone to gain his rights is well known. It's well known who was preventing the rightful owner to gain his rights. From here, I'd also like to make some more remarks about the presidential issue. We call for serious efforts. Of course, on May 25th, I spoke about a dialogue between the Free Patriotic Movement and the Future Movement. We're still waiting for the results of such a dialogue, but today we call for more than this, multilateral efforts. We call for multilateral efforts in order to reach the end of this, to elect a president, internal efforts. Now, you're saying, some people are saying they're waiting for what happens outside Lebanon, for foreign developments. But the foreign sides, first of all, have no time for Lebanon. That's first of all. Nobody has time for us, whether it be the presidency or anything else. Second of all, the foreign sides are saying all the time, in public and in private, that we don't want to intervene. So then, why are you waiting for the foreign sides? And allow me also, as we have distinguished ties with Iran, with the Islamic Republic of Iran, allow me also to say, don't wait for the Iranian-Saudi ties to develop, nor the Iranian-Saudi negotiations. Don't wait. Even in practice, first of all, there is no date set. For those who are waiting the hours and the days to pass, we Lebanese are not pursuing efforts and not communicating and not holding any discussions. We're just waiting. What are we waiting for? We're waiting for the Iranian-Saudi meeting and the Iranian-Saudi negotiations. Okay, first of all, until now, no date has been set. Second, it's not known if a date will take place in the near future. Number three, if we do have a date and if there is a meeting, it isn't known what the subjects of negotiation will be. Number four, if the subjects are specified, who said the presidency will be one of the subjects of negotiations between the Iranians and the Saudis? And number five and number six, from the very end, everybody knows, with respect to the Islamic Republic of Iran, it does not impose anything on its allies, nor on its friends, whether it be in Lebanon or in Syria or in Iraq or anywhere. Because the Islamic Republic of Iran respects its allies and its friends anywhere they may be. And hence, With all honesty, I, as a Lebanese and as part of the Lebanese people who are very keen and intent on not having a presidential vacuum and on electing a president as soon as possible, I say, come on, let's pursue serious efforts. There are leaders in the country who are capable of taking initiatives, and we, as Lebanese, let us go ahead and elect a president. Even those who are waiting for Saudi Arabia, the Saudis in public are saying, we don't want to intervene, at least in public. Okay, let's take what they say in public into account. Nobody wants to intervene. Nobody wants to pursue efforts, whether regionally or internationally. And all the countries who used to assist previously are now preoccupied, beginning with Syria to the last country of the world. I call here for internal efforts to be pursued in order to elect a president. The last point with respect to Lebanon is the ongoing calls being made by the Lebanese leaders, and also the wishes of the Lebanese people. What is new is that it seems there is international and regional consensus regarding stability, having stability in Lebanon and security in Lebanon. And I thank God. That is really a blessing that the whole world at this stage wants such stability. We want security and stability and calm in Lebanon. Okay, this is something which requires cooperation amongst the Lebanese. It's not enough to have international and regional wishes or international and regional will. Of course, international and regional will is important, and it does have an impact, because anybody can use his intelligence agencies in Lebanon and use certain groups and finance them, which could lead to a sabotage of the security situation. That is possible. But first and foremost, it depends on the will of the Lebanese themselves. And this is something which I call for today. And I stress, from our side, regardless of everything taking place in the region, regardless of everything taking place around us, we are very keen and intent on having peace and stability and calm. And that these days and these weeks and these months, we want them to pass in a peaceful way for Lebanon and for the Lebanese people. And safety and security and stability has a lot of blessings, a lot of political, psychological and economic and social, etc., repercussions. And so it's our responsibility, all of us, in order to further enhance this peace and stability, make these security plans successful, communicate, cooperate on any level whatsoever. Security and stability does not require a permanent political solution. Of course, if we do have such a solution for all outstanding issues between the political factions in Lebanon, that's better. But it doesn't require such a solution. It requires a will in preserving stability and peace in Lebanon. And one of the most important factors which has an impact, a minimal impact, is like we are witnessing today, which began months ago, the calm we are hearing in the political rhetoric, meaning when the incitement stops, especially the incitement which has a sectarian flavor, a religious sectarian flavor, when such rhetoric stops, it has a big impact on achieving stability and safety and security in Lebanon. Although there are some media outlets and some political factions who are ignoring this and who are continuing with their campaigns and their accusations and their lies and continuing to spread false information related to us and related to other sides, but regardless, okay, this doesn't change anything any of the reality. What is most important of all is that the sectarian rhetoric has decreased, and this is one of the most important elements in order to preserve stability and security and common calm in Lebanon. This is something which we must all be intent to preserve. Now, regarding the situation in Syria, I have a few words to say. The most important event which took place recently was the elections, the presidential elections in Syria. And this huge popular turnout, which is really considered a historic achievement and a great victory for Syria and its people and its leadership. Previously, America, the West, and a number of the regional countries exerted all efforts possible. They did everything they could in order to prevent the elections from taking place, presidential elections from taking place in Syria. They began with the threats. This took place in the beginning. They threatened, they said that if Syria holds presidential elections and schedules presidential elections, then the international community will do this and will do that. Of course, now they can't speak on behalf of the international community when we have countries like Russia and China and Brazil and South Africa and the countries of the BRICS who are not within this project. They cannot say that this is the will of the international community or the international will. The Americans, the West, and their regional friends, yes, they did make threats. They pledged, they said, if elections are held, we will do this, we will do that, and you can go back and check these statements or these threats. But actually, these threats and these pressures as well, and we know pressures were also exerted on the Syrian leadership in order for the elections not to be held, and some friends of Syria, there were also messages which were sent via some friends indirectly to the Syrian leadership from the Westerners and from the regional countries, but the Syrian leadership was intent, determined to hold these elections on the scheduled time. Second of all, the pressures practiced against the Syrian people or before, during these elections, when they previously considered that these elections are ridiculous, have no value and illegitimate, etc. So don't hold elections and we won't recognize these elections. And okay, but wait, look at these Syrian people, wait and see, will they go to the ballot stations or will they not go to the ballot stations? Will we see a turnout or shall we see a boycott? In the end, all those who rejected the presidential elections in Syria and described them before they were actually held and before it became clear how the turnout will be, they described it as ridiculous and illegitimate and not reflecting the popular will. This took place before the elections actually were held. They were making assumptions which were non-existent, and then they went and exerted pressures on the Syrian people everywhere, whether inside Syria or outside Syria. Outside Syria, we all know that a high number or a number of countries prevented the Syrians from casting their ballots and voting, and these countries allege that they want democracy and want people to express their will. Okay, but if you had allowed in your embassies to open their doors, and then it will be clear when the Syrian expatriates or those who are outside, if they boycott, then it will show that the government is illegitimate. Why didn't you allow them? This was a chance for the opposition. If we want to talk about a political, peaceful opposition, there was an opportunity to open the ballot boxes in all Syrian embassies in the world to show that the Syrians were boycotting, but they didn't allow this to happen, because they have information, which I'm going to refer to. Their information is that the Syrians will go everywhere, anywhere they may be. Anywhere there is a ballot box, they will go and participate. They will participate with a high turnout. This is the information of all intelligence agencies. For this reason, they were exerting efforts to prevent the elections from such a participation. If these presidential elections had no popularity, and if people indeed were not going to participate, participate. They should not have been so worried about it. They shouldn't have launched such a campaign and tried to prevent these elections from taking place. Then we saw the takfiri fatwas being issued against those who would go and cast their votes. Even if they were not electing President Bashar al-Assad, they would consider him as a kafir, as an infidel, someone whose blood can be spilt. Then we went to the eve of the elections when they threatened to make all different areas of blood or arenas of blood. And we also heard the so-called president of the Syrian opposition who made a speech to the Syrian people, and he said, stay in your homes tomorrow because our information as a Syrian opposition, listen to this, he said, our information is that the Syrian government will send car bombs to the ballot stations. So for the sake of your safety, stay in your homes. Isn't this funny? Such a speech? Doesn't this reflect failure? Doesn't it reflect something ridiculous? Instead of saying don't go to the elections because these elections are this or are that, no. He threatened them, he said that their lives were in danger, and then he said that the lives would be in danger because the government would send car bombs to the ballot stations. There is nothing more ridiculous, whether in psychological warfare or political warfare. The interest of the government is for the people to go to the ballot stations. It's the interest of the government for the people to go and stand in line. It's the interest of the government to hold popular elections. And then you go and accuse this government of sending car bombs? Who's talking to who? Anyway, the elections were held. Despite all of these obstacles, and despite all these efforts and these threats and the takfiri fatwas and the pressures, we all witnessed what took place in the elections. It's not something which is hidden. We all witnessed it. Now, whoever wants to think otherwise, that's his business. Whoever wants to say it was ridiculous, that's his business. In the end, describing reality in an unrealistic way doesn't change reality. It doesn't change it. We have something everyone saw, beginning in Lebanon. We all saw this. Lebanon, what we witnessed in front of the Syrian embassy on day one and on day two, especially on day one, surprised everyone what we saw. I'd like to say, honestly, not only were March 14 surprised, even the friends of Syria were surprised, we were surprised. Of course, in the end, they tried to belittle the situation. They said that Hezbollah put pressure on the people and provided transportation. But all this is not true. Nothing of this happened. The Syrians themselves, they are the ones who came from everywhere in Lebanon, from all different provinces or areas, and went to the embassy and cast their ballots. Nobody put pressure on them, nobody provided logistics or provided them with any ballot stations, mobile ballot stations. And in addition, please listen to get an idea of the mindset of those people who are confronting us, which makes us more convinced of our stance, of our strength, of our optimism in the future. When you look at what the other side, what they resort to, the lies they resort to, this shows that they have gone bankrupt. What did they say? They said that those who elected in the Syrian embassy are members of Hezbollah. Okay. Today, you, March 14, has the Interior Ministry. The institutions are under your control. Go, please show us who are the Hezbollah members who went and elected in the Syrian embassy. That is also silly. We saw in Lebanon, we saw in many world capitals, and most important of all, what happened in Syria. This huge turnout, which nobody could deny. Some might speak about the percentage, maybe a bit more or a bit less, but nobody can doubt or can deny that millions went down in all different provinces and all different cities, except those cities which are not under the control of the state, and stood in long lines for long hours and elected. Nobody can deny this. And so these elections took place. Of course, we heard after this some reactions. Some said that the elections are zero. That's your zero. But who says they are zero? These are the elections of millions. Or there are some who issued statements. Of course, I said to one of my colleagues, as if somebody has a list of curses and is just writing down these curses. Different curses in this statement. It's not a political statement, but this reflects failure, a sense of defeat, a sense of disappointment, because they expected that these ballot stations would be empty. Nobody would go to this embassy, nobody would go anywhere in the world, and even in Syria they expected to have a widespread boycott of the elections, and they expected the day whereby the government would be uncovered its true nature, but it backfired and the elections were held, and the Syrian people in these elections, what are the political results which were certified by this high participation in the elections? I would like to summarize them in order to conclude the Syrian situation, because I don't want to elaborate more. First of all, the unity of Syria. For all those who were planning to divide Syria on a sectarian basis or on a racial basis, these elections now have proven that Syria is one and will remain one. Second, the continued presence of the state. Yes, we do have a state, and this state is together, and this state is capable of holding elections in the country and outside the country, and is able to absorb millions of voters. At the same time, we saw in more than one country, we saw efforts to target the state and its institutions. This happened in more than one area inside Syria. Number three, it stressed on the will of steadfastness for the Syrians and for being present in order to draw the political future. No sense of despair, no sense of frustration, and not abandoning their future and giving their future for other countries to draw, between brackets, the friends of Syria countries. The Syrians in these elections said, we are the ones who will draw Syria's future, not America, neither Geneva 1 or Geneva 2, nor any capital in the world, whether international or regional capital. The Syrians are the ones who determine their future and rebuild their state and rebuild their nation and rebuild their political system or reform their political system. Number four, the millions who turned out said that the confrontation is not between the government and the people. As you said throughout the years which have passed, the confrontation isn't between the government and the people. If the confrontation was between the government and the people, we would have witnessed only a few hundreds or thousands who would go to the ballot stations. But when millions go to the ballot stations, that means at the very least that this government and this leadership enjoys a very, very high popularity, which was expressed by this participation in the elections. This saying that it's between the government and the people, if someone takes a stance in support of the government or more than a stance in support, nobody could say that you are fighting the Syrian people in defending the Syrian government. Rather, you are fighting with and in defense of those millions who went down on election day. And nobody can say otherwise. Between brackets, in Lebanon, they can say that the Syrian civilian isn't a displaced, but they cannot say he's not a Syrian civilian who has the right to vote and to choose a president. They can't say this, whether it be America or the West or any regional country. The Syrians are the ones who sent this message. Number five is that the military and destructive war on Syria has failed. These elections are a political and popular declaration of the failure of the war. Number six, which is the result, the big fruit of these elections, it's the following. For those who want to speak about a political solution or want us to help in a political solution, I'd like to tell them, he who wants a political solution in Syria cannot ignore the presidential elections which took place. They cannot ignore these elections. And these elections, whereby Dr. Bashar al-Assad was elected for a third presidential term in Syria, what does this say? It says that any solution is inappropriate. The realities, the situation says that any solution based on Geneva 1 is inappropriate, nor any solution based on Geneva 2, also such a solution, is inappropriate. It also says that any political solution, as they say, based on the resignation of Bashar al-Assad and him handing over power, such a solution is also not appropriate. Or, as some who call themselves moderate in the opposition, negotiations which lead to the resignation of Bashar al-Assad. You can no longer set preemptive conditions for the president to resign, nor can you set conditions for a negotiation or a political solution which leads to the resignation of the president. These elections say to all the opposition and to the international and regional countries and to the Syrian opposition, the national part of the Syrian opposition, the Takfiris of course are not within the calculation, but it says to all those other parties that the political solution in Syria begins and ends with President Bashar al-Assad. This is what these elections say. We have a president elected for a new term, a seven-year term, elected by millions, and he who wants a political solution must speak with him and negotiate with him and discuss with him and reach a solution with him. Bashar al-Assad meaning. What could this political solution be? What form could it take? That's serious business. But we, as friends who consider ourselves part of this confrontation, we could give some advice or ideas far away from the media, just like any
friend. From Beirut, there, Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah making a